Time tracking. This topic is important because in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, she points out the challenges one has regarding keeping one's thought focused where it should be. On page 403 of Science and Health, under the paragraph title of Errors, Power, Imaginary, she states, "You command the situation if you understand that mortal existence is a state of self-deception and not the truth of being. Mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions, and it will continue to do so until mortal error is deprived of its imaginary powers by truth, which sweeps away the gossamer web of mortal illusion." The most Christian state is one of rectitude and spiritual understanding, and this is best adapted for healing the sick. Never conjure up some new discovery from dark forebodings regarding disease and then acquaint your patient with it. This clearly presents the problem. And unless we have already ascended, in other words, we are not able to walk on water, and also are not at that point where Jesus was when he said to his disciples, "Do not touch me." In other words, he did not want to mix spirit with matter, as he already had attained in thought the pure sense of heaven and was preparing for the ascension experience. And he was wrapping up the probationary period beyond the belief of mortal death. So unless we are at that point in our experience, then we need to be concerned with what she states in this paragraph. Starting at the end of the paragraph, where she refers to a patient, let us consider that the only patient anyone has is their own thought. And therefore, everyone has a patient. And how about disease? Well, disease means dis-ease, a discord of any kind whatsoever. Sin certainly would be a disease. Death would be a disease. And everything in between. Any form of unlikeness of God would be a disease, no matter what the name is. If one is not in absolute, complete harmony, then one is in a state of disease, discord, friction, conflict. And the standard is God. So if we vary at all in our reflection of the qualities of God, then we are in that category of disease. And our patient, our thought, needs to do what she states in this paragraph, and that is rectitude and spiritual understanding. We need to correct. We need to self-correct our thought, and we need to advance our spiritual understanding. We need to dissolve in thought the imaginary powers of error. They don't seem to be imaginary when they are occurring to us. They seem to be very real. But as she states, this is a state of self-deception and not the truth of being. So how do we solve it? In the very first phrase, you command the situation if you understand that mortal existence is a state of self-deception and not the truth of being. Therefore, in other words, we are no longer in the dance of mortal mind when we are commanding the situation. We have divorced ourselves from that corrupt thought and corrupt atmosphere, and we are able to do what is related by Jesus when he dictated the book of Revelation to John, his beloved disciple, when he refers to putting off the old man and getting into the new heaven and new earth. And of course, that should be the goal of every sincere student. Student of truth, student of God. What is God? Was Jesus God when he appeared on earth in visible form? Is he God now? Was he ever God? Will he ever be God? Could someone in visible form be God? Could a visible form be omnipresent? Jesus stated, as being at one with his Father, but Mary Baker Eddy explains that that refers to being at one in consciousness. In other words, reflecting the consciousness of God. In other words, the pureness and the many other qualities of God. In the glossary, Mary Baker Eddy defines God as the great I Am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. The punctuation that she includes in the definition of God in the glossary is very interesting And it seems that we should heed the difference in the two different punctuations that she uses. The first phrase is the great I am, and then there's a semicolon. It seems that that is telling us that that is a statement that stands on its own. It's not dependent upon anything else to be complete. One could contemplate those four words for a substantial amount of time because it is so all-inclusive. And I am is all capital letters. So if one thinks about oneself or another person in that light, saying I am or that person is, then it may behoove them to consider what Mary Baker Eddy says about God being the great I am. If one refers to oneself and says, I am this, I am that, I did really a good job on this, or I really flubbed up on that, or I am happy, I am sad, I am successful, I am a failure. If one thinks about the only real I am as being God, then we should not be referring to ourselves in that light. The only thing that one is, according to Mary Baker Eddy, is a reflection. We are a reflection of the great I am. And we can only truly reflect what the great I am is. The manifestation cannot reflect anything that is different than the source of the manifestation. So if we want to truly be a reflection of God, the great I am, then we need to think of ourselves as being the perfect man that God created. As it states in Genesis, it says, God made man in his image and likeness. And man, of course, is just a generic term meaning everyone. If one is going to reflect man, then one is going to reflect all the qualities of God. The love and affection, tenderness, kindness that are normally attributed to a woman, and the strength and courage and intelligence and so forth that are often attributed to the qualities of a man. Just like the qualities of a child often include the term innocence. In other words, before they are inundated with what Mary Baker Eddy stated on page 403 about being subject to the results of false opinions. And she, in other places, refers to mortal existence being based on a lie upon lie. She refers to the compounding effect, here a little and there a little, but here in a very negative connotation, talking about a lie being compounded upon a lie. To do what? To make a bigger lie, a more predominant one that is more ingrained in one's thought, because they have heard it from so many places, for so long that they think that is fact, when of course it is not at all. It is all falsity. Kurt Russell, the actor, when questioned about the difference between what is fact or not, he was stating that the way we live our life is the real fact of our life to us. But when you are an actor on stage or in a movie, performing a function of acting for entertainment purposes, he said, that's all fantasy. Mary Baker Eddy is referring to fantasy when she states that mortal mind is constantly producing on mortal body the results of false opinions. And she states that that is a state of self-deception. Mortal existence is a state of self-deception and not the truth of being. So, getting back to the definition of God from the glossary in Science and Health, and everything after chapter 14, which is titled Recapitulation, is considered the key to the scriptures. So chapters 15 through 18 are all in the key to the scriptures portion. And the glossary being chapter 17 then is part of the key to the scriptures. In other words, understanding the Bible is very much dependent upon understanding the terms that are used in the Bible and in Mary Baker Eddy's writings. The definition of God, again, is, and I will include the punctuation, God. Period. In other words, this is about God and nothing else. The great I am, semicolon. So the great I am is a statement that is not dependent upon other words. And the next six phrases are all separated by commas. The all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. So those are adjectives which describe God. In other words, everything about God are reflecting those adjectives. They are terms which further enable one to understand the qualities of God. There is nothing else that can know except God. There's nothing else that can see except God. Nothing else can act. It's the only action. All wise is the only source of wisdom. All loving, the only source of love. And eternal. So there's nothing else that lasts forever, that is timeless. So that's God. And then she gives the seven synonymous terms, all separated by semicolons. Principle. Mind. Soul. Spirit. Life, truth, love. And then she adds two more qualities, also separated by a semicolon. all substance, intelligence. Period. And it's very interesting about another definition of God that she states in the chapter 14 entitled Recapitulation, because it is slightly different. The question is, as is all of chapter 14 based on questions and answers, the question is, what is God? That, of course, is followed by a question mark. But the answer is composed of 11 parts, all separated by commas. And this indicates, at least from the way I understand it, to mean that they are all connected. Here is what she states. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Period. Notice that the order of the seven synonymous terms are slightly different. In the definition given in the glossary, she states them as mind, soul, spirit, and then the other four of principle, life, truth, love. But here she states it as mind, spirit, soul, and then the other four of principle, life, truth, love. Spirit is defined as substance, which includes attributes such as pureness, and therefore transparency. For if something is pure, then it's going to be totally transparent. Nothing opaque about it. Nothing colored, but pure, transparent, such as clear water. And soul is defined as being spiritual sense. Now, the reason it's spiritual is because the only substance is spirit. So the only real sense, thinking of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, the only real senses are spiritual senses. So we must be seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling from a spiritual viewpoint, looking through the lens of spirit. And then principle, life, truth, and love are in the same order. As a brief note, it's highly recommended that in order to gain a better understanding of the synonymous terms, that one study a book by Helen Wright entitled Your Divinity Revealed. That valuable reference includes a separate chapter on each one of the seven synonymous terms. Her style of writing is unparalleled in terms of supporting what Mary Baker Eddy defines for each of these seven synonymous terms. But she has the genius, Helen Wright, I'm referring to, has the genius of showing how each one of the synonymous terms unfold within themselves to connect the wide variety of other terms that further explain the primary term. And by primary, I'm referring to the seven synonymous terms, each one being a primary term for the definition of God. Her genius style of writing delivers a book that is easy to read, enjoyable, includes some wonderful humor, but the meat is as serious as one could ever get. It is highly recommended. But I will just give you a few sentences on the definition of these primary seven terms. Mind represents creativeness, and that unfolds to ideas about taking an action, and that action must be an intelligent, knowing, and wise action, which will then accomplish an accomplishment is then measured as power. So when Mary Baker Eddy states that God is omnipotent, which is one of the four terms that she has used in other places, she has indicated that God is omnipotent as well as omniscient, omnipresent, all action. Some of the qualities of spirit have already been stated, which were pureness and transparency. And if one thinks about those qualities, it will be realized that that goes hand in hand with reflection. And that's in line with the Native American Indians, who referred to a beautiful lake that had calm water and a lovely landscape surrounding it. They would refer to it as the smile of the Great Spirit. The qualities of soul were previously mentioned, so I will go on to the next one, which is principle. And principle can be thought of as a structure and a system. In other words, it is all structure and all system is considered principle. And if one has a spiritual structure, which is the only kind that can exist because the only substance is spirit, and a structure by itself is not any good because you must have a system for the operation of the structure. So again, that has to be spiritual because of being the only substance. So if you have a spiritual system and a spiritual structure, then you have balance and harmony. So those are all qualities of principle. And it's very interesting that Mary Baker Eddy uses the word love with principle on several occasions. So she refers to divine principle love. Why would she do that? Well, if one studies the qualities of love, they will realize that love includes the terms of plan and design. So what kind of a principle could there be if there was no plan or design for the structure and for the system? It's easy to see that they go hand in hand, as do all of the qualities. The seven primary qualities reflect each other. What kind of a plan and design could you have if it wasn't intelligent or a wise plan? Those are qualities of mind. So mind certainly goes well with love. And as a matter of fact, one of the ways that Mary Baker Eddy connects all of the seven qualities is through a symbol called a candlestick or a candelabra, wherein the center core is principle, and then the other six parts of the candelabra would be on the left side mind and on the right side love. And those are the base, the bottom part of the candelabra. And the next step up would be spirit, and that is with truth on the other side. And the top of the candelabra is soul, and that connects on the other side with life. So getting on to a brief description of what these synonymous terms mean, the next one is life. And life is living the qualities of God. The activity, the expression, utilizing it in one's own experience, utilizing the qualities of God in one's own experience. And the next one is truth, and truth relates to consciousness, which includes motive. One's motive is a part of consciousness, and together they generate experience. Even in the so-called human realm of thinking, in a court of human law, they require a motive in order to come to a decision of guilty or innocence. It's one of the tools, one of the ingredients, in order to come to a conclusion. And the next one is love. And love includes terms such as wholeness, completeness. And of course, on a lower level of a more human scale, it is the terms of tenderness and kindness and consideration and so forth for each other. And that's a human or a relative level of thought. And a higher level would be the first terms of like wholeness and completeness, because that includes everything else. And of course, it was already suggested that it represents plan and design. So all of the terms work together. By now, one has probably surmised that everything that Mary Baker Eddy states and the punctuation she uses and the order in which she presents it has a purpose. And that opens up the door to an infinite number of possibilities. And of course, infinite is without number. So it enables one to approach the thought of what infinitude could possibly even be introducing. It's beyond vocabulary. The book that she wrote entitled Christ and Christmas has some very important illustrations, which basically gives the entire explanation of what Christian Science really is. And the last illustration is blank. And that indicates that it leaves it open for infinite unfoldment. The topic of this recording, termed time tracking, relates to another very important statement that Mary Baker Eddy makes. And that is based on the word moment. Noah Webster, in his 1828 dictionary, which is undoubtedly the finest reference one can use in order to better understand the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's writings. And in it, he defines moment as being the most minute measurement of time. In other words, it's smaller than mathematics can define. For mathematics can always be changed for a smaller or a larger number. No matter what the number is, it can always be defined in a way that is smaller or larger. A moment cannot be divided. It's indivisible. So that's the smallest measurement of time. And Mary Baker Eddy states that the difference between success and failure is dependent upon how one utilizes the moments, the plural, not just one moment, but all moments. And that gives us the thought that we should consider what ceaseless prayer means, praying without ceasing. And it seems that one way that one could view that would be that if we connect it to what she states about moments and what Noah Webster stated as the definition of a moment, the smallest measurement of time. It's easy to see how Mary Baker Eddy might very well be giving us the message that we must use all of our time. In other words, every moment that exists in being a manifestation of God. Every moment needs to be a manifestation of God. We have to be reflecting the qualities of God every single moment. Mary Baker Eddy states that it is a big fight to give up the mortal sense and adopt the spiritual sense. She also states that it must be done either by science or by suffering. And she says that she has never met anyone that did it by science. The lie upon lie that has been compounded and presents an atmosphere of falsity is so ingrained in one's thought that to clean it out is not an easy task. We may think that we have been enlightened and that we can give it up with a snap of a finger. Mary Baker Eddy refutes that. Moment by moment, we must progress. As referred to previously, here a little, there a little. Precept upon precept, here a little, and there a little. There's no big jump involved because of the lie upon lie that has been compounded and presented in so many different ways in every phase of our life. One of the finest practitioners over the years is a gentleman by the name of Wentworth Winslow. And he stated that we must consider our atmosphere as being like in a room where there is a telephone and a radio. The telephone rings, and if we pick it up, we're going to take in the suggestions of mortal mind. The radio is like something that is broadcasting uninterruptedly from a station he terms KOG, Kingdom of God. It's like a speed limit on a highway. The speed limit sign may be there every time we drive on the highway. But there may or may not be someone to enforce that law. But it's always there. Well, in the case of the radio, we are the ones to enforce the law to ourselves. The law is there, and it cannot be changed. The speed limit sign is there. And I suppose one could take some paint and change it. It doesn't change the law, but it changes the visible symbol. Well, we can't change the law of God. And the only way we can change the symbol is by misinterpreting the law. Instead of looking through the lens of spirit, we may put on a set of dark glasses. But that doesn't change the truth. It only changes what we can see as a view. An interesting publication titled The Psychologist and the Magician by Ernest Rodwick is available on the website. And Herbert Eustace wrote the introduction. That lines up very well with what has been discussed in this treatment, that is this recording. And not only does it deliver a very important message, but it's a wonderful illustration of what we've been discussing here in a very graphic form. It's also very entertaining. And by that I mean that you will probably want to finish it without interruption, because it certainly does hold one's attention. It also is a wonderful example of the importance of ceaseless praying and the value of the moment. Another way that one could think of a moment is that it is instantaneous. In other words, it is right now. It's not yesterday, it's not tomorrow, but only right now. Which means that if that moment is not utilized in a productive manner, then that is time that is wasted because it can't be replaced. The moment is now. It's very easy to regret something that one has done or to hope for something in the future. But the real action takes place now. The time is now. The place is here. Time condenses down to here and now. If we want to track our time, we need to focus on one thing: here and now. If we focus on here and now, there and then will be a success. We will become conscious of it already being fulfilled. The wholeness, the completeness of love, which, by the way, means that we have tended to focusing on the correct thing when it had to do with mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth, all of which have to be dealt with correctly in order to get to love, which is the completion, the wholeness. Love also represents nurturing, so we need to nurture the qualities of all the other synonymous terms in order to be able to have the fulfillment. Another term that is interesting for utilizing with the word love is lubricant. Love is the lubricant that enables everything else to operate, coordinate, balance, coincide as one grand action. Without the lubricant, there's friction, there's noise, there's discord, there's failure. But with love, there is smoothness, coordination, compatibility, balance, fulfillment. It's finalized meaning that nothing is absent and everything is present. Omnipresence. Another suggestion to better understand what is offered in this recorded treatment is the work of the Klingbeil family. Again, it's on the website. And Deborah, the daughter, which was the last survivor of the family, represents in her writings what had been accomplished by the family. The father, Bruce, was blessed with a very spiritual nature that was realized early in life, and he was a very successful practitioner involved in the healing practice of Christian Science. John, which was the son, was very adept with computers. So in their research, he was responsible for the programming and keeping track of the results of their research. And the research was all about the effectiveness of the different kinds or types of prayer. And these were practiced on seeds. In other words, seeds that would be utilized in agriculture or flowers, but anything that starts from, you know, the beginning of a seed and then matures into the full plant. And I'll just give you a little teaser as to what she discovered, and that is that the human brain, to believe, has a built-in system that once it receives an impression, it is highly resistant to change. There is a mechanism that is built within, totally unconscious, that is a self-defense system. And it operates completely without our knowledge. We might find ourselves saying, "I wonder why I did that," or "How could I have done such a stupid thing?" We may have been very conscious of what was intended to be done, and we clearly understood the difference between right and wrong. Whether it's the right and wrong way to do a particular procedure on something that we're working on or whatever. The way we were thinking about something, the way we acted about something. But then took an action that was different. An unfavorable action. Without even being conscious of what we were doing. One might refer to hypnotism or mesmerism. Mary Baker Eddy was unable to get her first edition of Science and Health published in 1875 until she completed a chapter on animal magnetism. And she uses that term to refer to a two-word term to include all forms of evil. It's like being attracted automatically to something that is animalistic without the good qualities that are prevalent in animals. Like being attracted with an urge to do something and we don't even realize it. Usually totally unconscious of what is taking place or why we did something. It's a short chapter, but a very important one in Science and Health. And she couldn't understand why there were so many delays. As a matter of fact, it just didn't get done, and that's the publishing of the book, until finally it unfolded to her that she needed to cover that topic. And as soon as she finished writing the chapter that was unfolded to her and revealed through listening to the divine mind speaking to her, then she proceeded to go where the publisher was located. And when she was traveling, one of the places that apparently she needed to change to a different train, the publisher was at the station. And they met at the station, both being in transit to each other. And she gave him the transcript, and he then finished the book, which ended up being the first of 432 editions published between the years of 1875 and 1910. Mary Baker Eddy states in her writings that she had received a letter from a church that wanted to pass on to her the wonderful news that the church was progressing in a beautiful way and everything was running smoothly. Much to their surprise, the response that she received from Mary Baker Eddy was the opposite of what they expected. They expected a note of congratulations and gratitude and support. Instead, Mary Baker Eddy informed them that that was too bad. Because if everything is going smoothly, that means that you are not aware of what is going on beneath the scenes. You have to be constantly challenged and recognize the challenge and overcome it. And they were not recognizing all the different beliefs that were taking place without their being aware of it. And therefore, they didn't realize there was something that needed to be analyzed, uncovered, and exposed, and annihilated. But they were just kind of going along their happy way and appreciating the niceties without realizing the very important part that Mary Baker Eddy referred to in her response. Mary Baker Eddy's life was filled with challenges constantly. The very church that she built, the very way of life that she discovered, although it could have revolutionized the world, was challenged by everyone all the time. I'm not saying there weren't a few exceptions, but generally, the same thing happened to her that happened to Jesus. When he was being crucified, how many came to the event to support him? There were a few. I think there were 4 or 5 people. I believe there was only one man who was John, and his mother, Mary Magdalene, I think 1 or 2 other ladies. That was it. And he taught thousands and thousands of people. One place alone where he fed 4,000, another place 5,000, after he'd been teaching them for many hours. And they don't count women and children. So there could have been, instead of 4,000, there could have been 10 or 12,000 or whatever. The same with the 5,000 group. And of course, that's only 2 events. He was constantly teaching people, constantly healing people. No one took it in. No one really became a part of it, except for really almost no one. John, I think, was the only real true blue disciple and follower. No one else. And that's why he came back in a form that John could recognize to dictate the book of Revelation, as noted earlier in this recording. Everyone must work out their own salvation. We can't depend on anyone else. It's between God and us, individually. We cannot expect Jesus to come back in a visible form. He did his work here. His work is done. No reason for him to appear in a visible form again. Or Mary Baker Eddy. Her work is done. It's up to each one of us to open our thought to the advanced teachings of Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy. And Jesus gave us tremendous values, treasures, in the 41 parables. And the website presents those 41 parables along with very excellent spiritual interpretations by Stamp and Moss. It's like the Sermon on the Mount. Each one of those parables are like the Sermon on the Mount. There is no end to the revelation that takes place when one studies it from a fresh beginning every time. Forget about looking at your old notes and seeing if there's anything you missed. Start fresh. Start absolutely fresh. Think about Genesis 1. In the beginning. Start at the beginning. And Mary Baker Eddy refers to that as really meaning in the only. So if we're going to think about only, the word only, then we've got to start fresh with God. Consider the definitions of God that Mary Baker Eddy gives to us. Start there. In any topic that one wants to explore, start with the definition of God. Think about each of those terms and what they mean as it relates to the topic that one is addressing. In an article on vision, Mary Baker Eddy states, or rather asks the question, are you able to focus no matter what comes your way? Well, it's coming our way every moment, based on what she stated that was quoted previously. Every moment, we've got that phone ringing, trying to make a suggestion to us. And all the time we have the KOG radio working. Which are we going to give attention to? Where's our focus going to be? Our work is cut out for us. God is omnipresent. No matter what the circumstance may seem to be, God is present right here and right now. And we must continuously listen to KOG to keep our thought fresh on the focus of God. Amen.